Hello and welcome to the Tech and Trees podcast. My guest today is Romain Diaz, the founder and managing partner of the climate tech VC Satgala. In the past year, one climate fund after another has been raised in Europe and America. But Satgala is special due to their geographical focus. They invest in Europe and Africa alike. Romain spent several years as an entrepreneur and venture builder on the African continent. He wants to do his part in paving the way for green growth in Africa. However, Africa is big, 54 countries to be precise, and not all of them are suitable for foreign investors. So, Romain walks me through the different criteria that make a country investable and how his funds at Ghana bridges Europe and Africa. Enjoy. Hi, Romain. Thank you so much for taking the time. How are you doing today?
Hey, Pascal. Thank you so much for having me. Doing really well here in sunny Lisbon. How are you today?
I'm very good. I'm not in southern Lisbon. I think your weather might be better than the one we got in South Africa right now. We're slowly but surely closing in on winter, while your days are getting longer and warmer still, which is nice.
Yeah. It's that time of the year, April, where it shifts, where it starts to become nicer in Europe.
yeah, exactly. A bit envious right now, because right now you start freezing inside here in South Africa. So we'll see how that goes, but it should be fine. To start off, I think I have some more personal questions for you, as usual. And the first one is, I would like to know what you think of when I ask you about a formative childhood experience of yours.
Yeah. So if I think of my childhood, I think I have to think of happy moments because I had the privilege of having a very happy childhood. And when I think of my happiest moments, I would say that they're the ones where I was lucky to be in nature, wherever that was. Whether it was in going out in the woods or doing bicycles in the countryside or mountains or whatever. And when I think of my childhood, that's the one main thing that I think about is joy of being out in nature.
and how does that tie into your answer to the question of like who is Romain Diaz?
Yeah, well, I guess it was because I didn't grow up in cities. I grew up in a very tiny village where I had that privilege to be in nature all the time, and that gave me a very deep love for nature and how much it is really fulfilling when you have the chance to be there and spend time there and so on, and how much I was very much integrated with the cycles of life, I would say. And I don't know how much that influences my personality, but for sure my work, obviously, because of my work on sustainability and trying to make a difference in healing nature and the climate and so on, and trying to look at it from a holistic perspective. But yeah, to answer your question on who I am, I would say, or what do I think of myself, or how do I think of myself? I try to reach as far and broad at all levels, meaning I think of myself as being connected to the ideals of a better world, and trying to make a positive difference, and being quite idealistic, but at the same time, having very deep roots and anchoring myself into practicalities. And it's not just about dreaming, it's about doing. And that's also that shows in the way we build the fund, in very concrete strategies and so on. And I'm sure we'll get there. Also trying to get far and reach in terms of left and right, so left side of the brain, so trying to be as rational in the way we do things, but at the same time the right part of the brain, meaning more intuition and so on, so trying to connect to that. So I try to think of myself of trying to reach far and wide at all levels.
And in that case, when you're bridging two different worlds, it seems, on the one hand lofty ideals, and on the other hand you try to practice them as well, that usually provides good ground for controversials. So I'd like to ask you, what is like the most controversial idea that you support?
Yeah, indeed. I would say I had to think a bit about this one, and I would say is it might sound a bit paradoxical because I am obviously in the world of capitalism, whether even if we're trying to make an impact and do it in a way that is very holistic and not just looking at the bottom line and, you know, taking into consideration positive impact, negative impacts and so on. But I'm still very much in the capitalist system. We're very much like an investment fund that is not fully disrupting the status quo. Yet, there's one controversial idea I have, which is that I think it should be forbidden to be a billionaire. I think once you reach a certain level of wealth, let's say 1 billion euros, dollars, I think one should not be allowed to own more than that in liquid assets. I think by then we should say that one has won the game of capitalism, and that everything above that, beyond that, should be given to charity or the climate, or redistributed to people who have less beyond that a bit arbitrary threshold of 1 billion.
I was just going to ask, like, what should be done with that money? Like, after you reach 1 billion, like, is there a structured way to make that productive?
I haven't delved deep into the thinking because I think it will be very, very hard. But you could either enforce it, meaning that beyond that, it would go to, that could be controversial, but maybe fully taxed, 100%. Or given fully to charities, part of which for the environment and the climate, part of which for social causes, or it could be at the willingness of that person, or maybe it's a mix of both, you know, like taxing most of it and still giving a leeway for the person to choose whether to give it for certain charities and so on. Obviously, they would need, like, there's so many things we need to think about in order to ensure there's no corruption and so many things. But overall, yeah, I think one should think of the environment and social angles. So if you reached 1 billion, then you could say that you've contributed to the economic system, and then over and beyond that, over and above that, to contribute to environmental causes and social causes.
Yeah. Okay. So you'd say being a billionaire is overrated. To use that as a transition to my last question for you before we get truly into what you're doing today. What is one thing that you consider to be overrated?
I would say expensive things. So whether it's wine, whether it's, and I'm saying this and you might hear that I'm from France, but I still think that expensive wine, expensive watches, expensive clothes, expensive cars, all expensive stuff, luxury stuff, I think is really, really overrated. And it's not really what brings value to the world, nor happiness.
When you say that, can I ask you, what is the most expensive thing you own?
It's a good question. It's actually a guitar that I was recently gifted. I'm a big fan of music and guitar, and but it's just, it's an expensive guitar, but it's only 1,000 euros. I think that's probably the most expensive thing that I own, and a MacBook, obviously.
Okay, interesting. Cool. Well, thank you so much for this short introduction. Today, I think I would like to do two things with you. And first, I would like to talk to you about impact and startup investing in Africa. And then secondly, I would like to talk to you about how exactly you're doing that with your fund Satgana, if that makes sense to you. And perfect. I think I would just kick it off with a question, like, what is your thesis for investing on the African continent?
So because of my paradigm and the way I see the world of business, I cannot have a thesis that is not encompassing an economic standpoint along with a social standpoint and an environmental standpoint, because I truly believe that the business world and the private sector and money in general is a very powerful force that can be used for the greater good or for more exploitation and extraction and destructive practices. And because of that, I think one should really have a thesis that encompasses all or the three main aspects that we, you know, we have them in the three P's, so planet and people and prosperity. And so a thesis, in my opinion and my worldview, should really be encompassing the three of them. So in the context of Africa, it is about the fact that obviously Africa is the youngest continent on the planet. It has a very fast growing population, rapidly urbanizing, leapfrogging innovation. So obviously there was no, for example, desktop computers. It went straight to mobile, and same with a lot of like innovation that has leapfrogged what we had in other more developed markets. So that is definitely on the economic standpoint, but should also encompass social development and environmental development. And the environmental is even more prominent right now, because not only do we need to align with net zero goals, halving emissions by 2030, reaching net zero by 2050, so being putting the continent on the path to green growth early enough, because there's still a lot of things to be done in terms of energy, mobility, food, agriculture, etc. So the earlier we can put the continent on the path to green growth, obviously the better from a mitigation standpoint, but also in terms of adaptation. Because if we don't solve for climate change or for our carbon emissions in the northern hemisphere and developed countries, then that will have tremendous social impacts. And that's, I believe, where the social angle is really intertwined with the environmental angle in Africa in particular. And obviously, this should be done in conjunction with social aspects as well, because we can't just expect people who are less developed than other continents to go for the green choice, especially when it's more expensive, because there's many, many other priorities when it comes to health, to education, to financial inclusion, and so on. So it's about also getting that innovation in such a way that is affordable and just plain better, so that we don't demand African people to go for the green option if it's more expensive. So it's really about having this paradigm that takes into consideration social development, social impact, environmental impact in terms of mitigation and adaptation, and obviously economic development.
Yeah, and I guess you have been doing a lot of thinking in the past about should you be doing investments in Africa formally, and you've probably been thinking about, okay, so there were some pros, as you mentioned, for example, like the young population, the potential for leapfrogging innovation. But I guess there were also some cons when you were thinking, okay, this might be too risky, or this might put all this investing in Africa at risk. So I would like to know what pros outweighed which cons.
Yeah, so first of all, we talk about Africa, but Africa is actually 54 countries. So it's very important to keep in mind that as much as sometimes in the developed world, we speak about Africa almost as a whole, but it's actually many different countries with very different dynamics, political systems and currencies and dynamics and cultures and languages and so on. So in our case and in my case, when I look at Africa, I can only speak for like the top level data and so on. Obviously, I follow it on a daily basis, but in terms of my practical experience and my networks and so on, it's actually a handful of countries where I am comfortable. So it's actually a very tiny minority in terms of maybe not in terms of VC investments, because like 80-90% of the VC investments on the continent are happening in four countries, which is South Africa, Kenya, Egypt, and Nigeria. Not in that order, actually. But yeah, from my perspective, it's actually only a handful of countries. And so, yeah, I think that's really one thing to take into consideration. And for me, it's about the economic opportunity. It's about the social impact that any investment can have on the continent. It's also about responsibility in a way, because I believe that we should not forget that a lot of innovation needs to happen on the continent for it to be on a path to green growth, to get access, to give access to everything from electricity to education, health, and so on. And it's also intellectual curiosity, if I'm honest, because I think it's just fascinating to see what's happening on the continent and in emerging countries in general, that I don't want to only stay in my bubble of knowing what's happening in Europe and then dismissing what's happening in emerging countries. So it's not only responsibility, it's not only impact, it's not only economic upside, but it's also just intellectual curiosity to be open to what's happening in other regions in the world.
Yeah. And so you've given a lot of like of the pro sides of why you would invest in Kenya, for example. Could you briefly go into what are usually factors that would prevent you from investing in let's say Tanzania, for example, right? Like, what would these countries have to change to attract more investment?
Yeah, so to be honest, I don't know Tanzania very well. I've just been there once, but more like traveling, so I don't really know the market. I think it is, I mean, it's for sure much less developed than the big four that we call them in Africa. So, and again, each country is quite specific in terms of policy, in terms of population, in terms of so many factors that make it really hard to pinpoint one thing that the continent needs to do, because it is really on a per country basis. But for sure, there needs to be work in terms of infrastructure, in terms of attracting capital, in terms of international capital, easing local rules when it comes to visas, when it comes to attracting foreign investment, in terms of access to digital services, in terms of cost of mobile data. There's so many things, but obviously ranked in different orders in terms of ease of doing business per country. Like, for example, if we take the example of Rwanda, it's a very small country, a fairly small population, but is very much at the forefront of innovation in terms of policy, in terms of taxes, in terms of digital hubs for entrepreneurship, in terms of investment, and so on and so forth. And that will be maybe very different from Tanzania, which has a much bigger population, but much less innovation on this front.
Yeah. How does startup investing for you in Africa differ from investing in Europe overall? Like, what, where are the differences in the process? I imagine you can't just like take your investment framework for Europe and put it like apply it in Africa.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess a lot of innovation that happened in developed countries are being developed or can be then deployed in emerging markets. So, for example, if we take the case of a portfolio company of ours, which is called Mazi Mobility, it's a company that does electric mobility in East Africa. So on the one hand, they took some of the very well developed innovation from other markets. It's electric motorbikes and batteries. So most of the innovation from a hardware standpoint has happened in other markets. The design and the engineering and so on happens maybe more in developed countries, and then a lot of scaling and scaling down of the cost has happened in Asia, India, and in China in particular. So that innovation has happened in other markets, but then bringing it locally and then deploying locally required some adaptation to the local markets. For example, in Europe, we tend to have more charging stations for electric mobility, whereas in East Africa, it tends to be more swapping. So it's more about having all these fleets of drivers who really want to swap very quickly, and then on the go. They don't necessarily need to own the battery, but they want to actually be able to swap the battery very quickly, and that required a local adaptation. So you can use a lot of the innovation that happened in terms of just internet, social networks, cloud computing, and business model innovation and so on that happened in other markets, in developed markets. So you can deploy that. So that that means that it's a little bit different as compared to coming up with true breakthrough innovation. But at the same time, it's about localizing the business models. And that requires a local understanding of things from a cultural standpoint, from a cost standpoint, from a, like, there's so many things that needs to, you can't just deploy, or in most cases, you can't just copy paste what has been done in the north to just deploy it in emerging countries.
Yeah, so it's a lot more business model innovation and adaptation rather than, let's say, technological innovation. I was talking to Duval from the Launch Lab, whom you know, and he was saying that the need to consider that you're trying to build a business for people who sometimes maybe earn or live on like $5 a day and not on European standards, right? So like, you might have technology, but you need to think a lot more about how do you deploy it or bring it to people who simply do have are living completely different realities.
Yeah, fully agree. I wish there was more breakthrough innovation that really came from the South, but it's also a matter of priorities in terms of development. It's also in terms of access to talent, access to grant funding, access to to cheap ways of doing innovation, access to capital, etc., that just makes it a lot harder to have pure breakthrough innovation in more emerging markets.
Yeah. Before we go into what you're doing with Satgana and what kind of vision you pursue, I would like to ask you a bit about what can venture capital achieve on the African continent? What kind of impact can you have? And so founders have, you know, many barriers in front of them when you look at Africa, and not only access to capital. So what impact can venture capital actually have in Africa? What can it change?
Yeah, so venture capital is really basically a tool to accelerate innovation. That's essentially what it is. And there is a common narrative in Africa that when you do VC or when you do entrepreneurship, it is necessarily impact entrepreneurship, even if it's not branded as such, because there is so much of a need for social economic development that anything you do, especially when you bring foreign capital, whether it comes from the US or Europe or other markets or even Asia, it is an impact investment, even if it's not branded as such. And even if the impact outcomes are not as prominent as the economic outcomes, meaning that you have a lot of funds that are just primarily focused on financial returns, but yet without necessarily looking for impact, they have impact at the core of what they do, because anything you bring onto the continent fosters more innovation, more social development, more economic development. In our case, we are an impact fund, so we don't just assume that there will be positive impact. We also need to measure impact. And we try as much as possible to, and it's far from easy, but what we try to do is to have business models that have a inherent correlation between financial success and positive impact. So basically, the more the company scales from a commercial perspective, the more it has positive impact. And on top of that, we try to incorporate social impact KPIs, but more in terms of how we do things. So in terms of inclusion of women, in terms of trying to have as much as possible local founders, et cetera, rather than what. So we don't really invest in social impact in terms of, say, access to health or access to financial services or access to education and so on. That's not really part of our mandate, because we're an environmental and climate focused fund. But we still take into consideration social KPIs when we invest, and really try to also bring that awareness to the founders, or really work with them to incorporate these social KPIs.
Yeah, and you just said that there are some investors, other than you, for example, who are only focusing on financial returns, but are still achieving some sort of impact. What is like the general investment climate in Africa right now? I assume that you are talking to some other investors on the continent, right? And overall, the funding sentiment or momentum, let's say, is not in a great place right now, at least in Europe or the US overall, right? There's a bit of a downturn. So I wonder, does that differ from what's happening in Africa?
Yes. So actually, there was quite a bit of data in the past few months showing that Africa, in terms of relative numbers, has been less affected than other continents by the current VC downturn, which is great news for the continent. I don't know how resilient and how sustained that will be, but it's been the case since the downturn, which happened now about 9 months ago. Like, it's really started to be the case in Q3 2022, and Africa has still grown as compared to 2021 in terms of VC amount dollar invested, and has been generally fairly resilient. My belief is that it should continue to be the case, especially as we see more successes. Recently, there's been a company called InstaDeep in Tunisia, which has been acquired for $600 million. It's a born and bred African company, and that major success tends to attract more capital. So that's just one success. And in general, I think there is much less money coming into VC, but there is still a lot of VC money that has been raised by funds, and this money in general needs to be invested. So obviously it still needs to find good investment opportunities, and obviously there is always a bit of a risk of LPs missing their payments and so on. But in general, the VC market itself should be quite resilient, in my opinion, because a lot of funds have been raised in general. So maybe quite a few have been a bit waiting on the sidelines for a couple of quarters now because they were a bit unsure how to read the market. But I believe that they will still be mostly deployed. And as such, the VC market should not be too affected, I believe. I stand corrected, but that's my belief and my hope.
Let's hope we're in a good place here. Let's get talking more about what you're doing with a fund that you have recently brought to life. It's called Satgana. You're investing in Europe and in Africa. And I would simply like to ask you, what vision do you pursue with Satgana?
Yeah, so basically we're trying to invest in the next generation of founders who are creating technology solutions against the climate and the ecological crisis. When I say climate and ecological, it's because climate change is obviously the big topic that we talk about in terms of one of the biggest challenges that humanity is facing. But we're also looking at other environmental metrics such as biodiversity, plastics. We also look at climate adaptation, especially in the context of emerging markets. So it's not only about carbon emissions and CO2 and other greenhouse gases, but it's also about other environmental metrics that we look at, although I would say about 80% of our deal flow is still climate focused. But yeah, we're looking for the innovators that are creating scalable, commercially driven solutions that can help us be on a path to more sustainability and more regeneration. Because we believe that it is the right thing to do from an ethical perspective towards our planet who feeds us and enables to live in this wonderful one and only home we have, or at least that's my belief, that it should remain as such and it should remain our focus. And also from a social perspective, that it's the right thing to do, because if we don't solve climate change and carbon emissions in the Northern Hemisphere, it will have the most tremendous implication in the Global South. And we also believe that it's not only the right thing to do from a ethical perspective, from a planetary and human perspective, but also from a commercial perspective. We think that is the moment for climate tech in general. And when I say climate tech, encompasses these other environmental metrics that I mentioned earlier. We think it's also the biggest opportunity of our generation, because we need to decarbonize all economies. We need to do things differently. We need to completely change the way we eat, the way we move, the way we produce food, the way we produce energy, the way we just make our economies work from a linear to a circular model, etc. Easier said than done, but that's definitely what we need to do in the next 10 years. We don't have a lot of time, and in the next 30 years, actually even less than that, because we're now in 2023, and that will require tremendous changes in the way we do things, basically. And that's not just, in my opinion, the trend of 1 or 2 or 3 or 5 years, like we had a lot of trends in the VC world, but that's really a macro trend that is going to be the case for the next 20, 30 years. And as such, we believe that it is the right time. There's regulatory tailwinds. There's the younger generation, which is more demanding. There is more and more conscious consumers. There is talent that wants to work for purpose-driven companies. So everything is going in this direction. And that's really our belief that it is the right time and the right thing to do to invest in these themes.
And because you have a focus on two different continents, I wonder a bit, how did you go about setting this fund up? Because, you know, sometimes there are funds that say, okay, we invest in Europe and in the US, for example, but that's still a very developed state, for example, right? But investing in Africa is so much more delicate and so much more difficult. So how did you go about setting up the fund and also building the network that you rely on, I guess?
Yeah, so that's partially driven by my own experience and background. So maybe a quick background myself. As I said, I'm originally from France. I studied business in France, but did quite a bit of work in emerging countries. Did my master thesis on social entrepreneurship in Brazil. I lived in Mexico. I lived in China when it was still considered an emerging country. Spent quite a bit of time in India. And most importantly, I was involved in the very early days of what became the first unicorn in Africa called Jumia in Morocco. That was about 10 years ago. And then I was fortunate to live in Cape Town for about 7 years. And because of that, so I set up a number of ventures. I set up one of the first venture studios on the African continent called Far Ventures. And that gave me a lot of exposure to the issues of the continent, but also a lot of networks, co-investors, founders, ecosystem builders, and just networks in general. And because of the reasons that I mentioned earlier, and obviously my connections to the continent, even though I relocated to Europe a couple of years ago, I'm now based in the wonderful city of Lisbon, I still do quite a bit of work on the African continent, and I want to do so. And at the same time, I'm based here in Lisbon. A lot of our team is here in Europe, in different countries, from France to Switzerland to the Netherlands to Germany and so on. And our fund is based in Luxembourg. So that gives us the privilege of really having access and a view on both continents in terms of founders, deal flow, in terms of portfolio companies. Now we've made 8 investments, of which 6 in Europe and 2 in Africa. In terms of co-investors, in terms of LPs, etc. So we have the privilege to be on both continents, which again is it's a privilege. It's stimulating intellectual curiosity. It gives us an edge in seeing things that many other investors may not see, because we really see what's happening on both sides of the Mediterranean, or rather emerging countries versus developed countries. And it's just fascinating as well to be able to jump from helping a company in Ethiopia to helping a company in Germany in just a matter of 1 hour. It's really wonderful.
Yeah, I can imagine. Let's talk about that. You said you've made 2 investments in Africa. Can you name those, and maybe also walk me a bit through the core questions that you had to answer to be comfortable with investing those and so on? So walk me a bit through the process of, like, how did you find them? What key questions did you have to answer, and how did everything come together?
Yeah. So in terms of how do we find them, we have 2 main ways of generating deal flow. One is very much inbound. So because we have a following, we have like 10,000 followers on social media, because we're out there, because we're doing partnership and so on, we just receive a lot of inbound deal flow of entrepreneurs who just find us, or even Google search and so on. So they find us. The other way that we generate deal flow is a bit more outbound. So going into universities, you mentioned Launch Lab. We collaborate with them on climate investments in South Africa and in Kenya. We are very early in looking at universities and early stage incubator accelerators and so on. We also look at a lot of co-investments alongside the other impact VCs on the continent. So we exchange deals and opportunities and so on. So that's a bit more proactive and outbound. And that's how we find the companies in general. It's really going early, trying to find the companies that fit our thesis, our topics of interest, which are mobility, food, agriculture, energy, circular economy, buildings, and so on. And then we prefer to co-invest in general. So we are comfortable with a set of co-investors that we know well, that we already have experience with, and so on. And then obviously doing a bit of diligence checks on founders and knowing the ecosystem and so on to give us comfort, along with obviously looking at the things that most VCs look like in terms of scalability of the model, in terms of defensibility and unit economics and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and the 2 investments you made, what are they doing? What are the products that you're not hoping to boost with your capital?
Yeah, so one of them that I mentioned earlier is called Mazi Mobility. They do electric motorbikes and a network of swapping stations, battery swapping stations in Kenya. We've been working with them for now 2 years. And we're actually co-investing with the Launch Lab in Stellenbosch in South Africa, although the company is based in Kenya. And the other one is a company called Cubic, which does low carbon buildings with a circular model, because they're diverting plastics from landfills to make low carbon houses in Ethiopia. And they also have operations in Kenya. And we're really happy about this investment as well. We invested earlier this year, and the company has recently notably been named Startup of the Year at the Global Startup Awards, which give them a lot of visibility. It's the first time that an African startup wins this award. And very big fans of Kidus and Penda's team and their work in Ethiopia.
Yeah, congrats on that in that case. What were like the 2... Or like behind the 2 investments, what were like the key factors that convinced you to make these investments?
at the end of the day, the main first criteria we look at is the quality of the founding team, because from that trickles down all the rest, basically. What market they're going to target, what impact they want to create, how commercially savvy they are, and so on. Everything really starts from the founding team, and most importantly in the CEO, but the founders in general. That's the first thing that we look at. That's our main criteria. Then we look at traditional unit economics and criteria that most VCs look like in terms of market size, in terms of business model, in terms of traction and so on, although most of them are very, very early in terms of traction. But again, if we defer to our judgment on the quality of the founding team, that generally trickles down to hopefully good businesses. Then we look at the potential impact. So in the case, for example, of Cubic, what we love is the fact that it's a really triple impact. So it's low carbon buildings, cement, and the construction sector is responsible for 6 to 8% of global greenhouse gas emissions. So doing lower carbon buildings is a key lever in terms of decarbonization. It's also a circular model because they're diverting plastics from landfills. And last but not least, it's affordable housing. So it's really triple impact. And they're doing it with a model that is meant to be commercially viable. So if they succeed, which I believe they will, it could be a massively impactful and massively successful business. So that's looking at the impact. And then last but not least, obviously, we also look at the quality of the deal in terms of deal terms, in terms of valuation, and how much we can own of the company and what we can bring to them and so on.
Yeah, both the investments you made in Africa were hard tech, so to speak, so physical products, right? Do you have any opinion on whether hard tech, for example, is more important on the African continent, or are you completely unbiased with regards to this?
I wouldn't say it's more important. In general, the conventional wisdom in climate tech is that to solve the climate crisis, we need to move atoms and not just bits, meaning that really like going into real world stuff is essential if we want to make a difference. But I, coming back to my point on the fact that any kind of VC in Africa is impact VC, whether it's branded as such or not. We also want to invest in software development companies or software companies. I actually previously co-founded a number of software companies on the continent, not necessarily impact-driven in terms of business model, but in, as such, they are creating jobs. They're also driven by inclusion and so many other aspects in terms of what I believe the impact is and can be in the future. So we don't really have a strong thesis in terms of saying that hardware is more important than software in the continent. Although in general, for sure, if we really want to put the continent on the path to green growth, then I think that hardware definitely has a potential to have more impact than software.
Yeah. I'm wondering right now, like sometimes the criticism towards foreign investors in Africa is that, you know, that they don't really understand the local context that they're investing in, and that therefore the investments might be either misguided or actually producing side effects that they won't be aware of. How do you work at Satgana to bridge this gap between Europe and Africa? How do you make sure that you gather this important information? Because as we said earlier, right, like the adaptation of business models to local context is so important in this case here.
Yeah, so first of all, a few of our team members have deep African roots. One of our team members is based in South Africa. One of our investment directors is from four countries in Africa. I myself lived and work on the continent for about 10 years. So we do have some knowledge of the continent, even though I'm European. So that's first in terms of our own team. In terms of who or which companies we invest in, we have a very strong preference for local founders rather than European or American or other foreign founders as much as possible. Not always the case, but that's definitely our preference. And all things being equal, we would prefer a local founder just in terms of both economic empowerment and social impact, but also in terms of knowledge of the local market. And last but not least, we try to co-invest with investors that are deeply in on the ground as well, and that know the market and also can challenge us on our perspectives when we're not necessarily locally based and not necessarily know very deep a specific industry. We try to co-invest alongside investors who are also on the ground.
Yeah. As we're talking a bit about the challenges of investing, I'm also thinking again of the challenges that founders are facing. And we said, okay, there's access to capital, for example, right? But there are also other challenges such as access to talent, for example, having the right knowledge yourself, right? And simply like a lot of operational skills that people might not have. And the way I understand that Ghana's up is kind of what you would call an operational VC, right? You provide quite a lot of hands-on support. Could you talk a bit about how this setup works and what's the rationale behind that?
Yeah, so for us, operational support is very much part of our DNA. First, because I come from a venture studio background. I was part of a couple of venture studios in Morocco, in South Africa. Then I co-founded and was CEO of a startup studio in South Africa for 5 years. So I really came from that background. We even started Sadgana as a venture studio initially. We started our first company, Mazi Mobility, with a venture building approach, meaning we were really deep in the trenches on a daily basis. So that's very much part of our DNA in terms of our modus operandi. It's also a way to be chosen by founders. So we manage to get sometimes in very competitive deals because founders want us on the cap table because they know and they have heard reputation that we have, that we're really involved and helpful. It's also a risk mitigation strategy because the more involved we are, the more we can ensure that we maximize the chances of succeeding and that we know what's happening within the company and so on. And last but not least, it's just fascinating. I'm speaking with most of our founders almost on a daily basis on WhatsApp, and they share, you know, or email or calls or Slack or and so on, and they share their wins, their challenges, their concerns, etc. And that's something that's very much part of even my passion. You know, I love to work with founders. I love to help them. I love to walk in their shoes as much as possible. I love for them to know that I know what they're going through and that I will really roll up my sleeves to help them as much as I possibly can for them to succeed. And so, yeah, that's very much part of what we do. And then we also try to plug in resources in these companies. So we have a number of advisors and board members and IC members, and most importantly, our LPs as well. We have about 60 LPs in our fund, and a lot of them want to be helpful with our portfolio companies, helping with anything from industry expertise, markets, impact management, technology, marketing, go-to-market, product, fundraising, etc. And we really try to plug in these resources to the companies that we invest in.
Yeah, with this operational setup, as well as having the focus on Europe as well as Africa, what does your recruitment process look like? Like, how do you bring this, yeah, let's say more diverse skill set that you might require from people into your recruitment process?
Yeah, so diversity is definitely part of a very important part of what we do. We have a majority of women at all levels of the company, and we have a gender lens in our investment process, etc. So diversity is key from a gender perspective, but also ethnicity in terms of age, in terms of background, and so on. We're not actively recruiting. We're a small team. We don't have a lot of funds under management at this point. So we're still a very small team on a like full-time dedicated basis. But beyond that, we have the Sadgana Collective, which is a bunch of wonderful advisors, LPs, board members, and so on, some of whom are more passive and just, trusting us with their capital to do the right thing. But some of them are very active and really want to help to represent us on the board of companies or to speak with the founders, to plug in some form of functional or sectoral expertise and so on. So we really try to do the match as much as possible between those companies and this broader collective that we are fortunate to have.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I think we're coming to an end slowly but surely. So I have like one very big question actually for you to the end. And it's I would like to ask you about what I call the African miracle. So how can African economies develop sustainably while empowering the people who have historically been left behind, right? Like, so what are different factors that need to come together to make this big transition happen, something that no other continent has ever done before?
So it's
and there are no right or wrong answers. Like I ask this question a lot, and I'm just trying to figure it out for myself. So I'm just trying to get other perspectives here.
I think we might need a couple of more hours to speak about that.
I have time. And
yeah, decades of work that has been done. So I don't have all the answers, but definitely more needs to happen on the continent from an entrepreneurial perspective in terms of investment, in terms of activism, in terms of consumer preferences, in terms of fighting corruption, in terms of infrastructure, in terms of talent, in terms of foreign investment, in terms of policy, in terms of even donors from other countries, from multilateral agencies. So just a lot more that needs to happen at all levels. So, and I don't believe that there's one silver bullet in saying that, I don't know, VCs are going to change the face of the continent, or that entrepreneurship alone is going to, or that stopping corruption is going to, or that policies going, or governments are going to change the status quo, etc. It's really each and every one of these parties have a role to play. And then obviously at an individual level, in doing the right thing, in educating ourselves, in trying to have an impact in terms of making the right consumer preferences, in terms of everything. So it really needs to come from all angles. And it's obviously more easy to say than to do it, because not everyone is working in the right direction, and not everyone has the same priorities. But just everything needs to happen at all levels. And that's also what needs to happen, not only for the continent, but in terms of also fighting climate change and the ecological crisis that we're in. It's not one silver bullet. It's not because we will invent, let's say, nuclear fusion, that's it. Our problems are done, because there's so many other things to take into consideration. And I think it's important to keep that in mind, is that it needs to come from everywhere and everyone. And everyone has the skills, has some skills that they can apply to it as well. So whether you're a marketer, financier, recruiter, you have a deep expertise in the ocean or in gender equality or whatever it is, there is something to be done, and we need all hands on deck.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Let me, just to really finish off, ask you the same question a different way. If you were born in South Africa today, and I picked South Africa because I think it's the country that you know the best on the African continent, what kind of skill sets would you try to acquire, and what would you try to do to help bring about this transition?
I think focusing specifically on South Africa, I would focus on energy, because South Africa is a massive producer, and a lot of its energy mix comes from coal, which obviously is the source of energy that produces the most carbon emissions. At the same time, it has a lot of wind and sun, so it doesn't harness all the power that it can. And at the same time, it has a lot of what we call in South Africa, I still say we, even though I don't live there anymore, load sheddings, meaning electricity outages. And it sounds a bit crazy that there is so much renewable potential, yet most of it is focused on coal. And so there's abundant coal, there's abundant renewables, yet there's a lot of power outages. So to me, that's one of the main problems that needs to be addressed, alongside inequalities, especially from a racial perspective or ethnicity. It's definitely something that, I mean, we could go deep into the why and how and so on, but that's obviously the big other one that needs to be addressed, along with security and safety. So many things.
Lots to be done. Cool. No, Romain, I have to let you go, unfortunately, but thank you so much for taking the time. This was awesome. Thank you, and well, all the best with Sagana.
Thank you so much, Pascal. Really nice to be here. Thank you so much for your work.